And welcome back, Nashville. What a day in the world of sports. There is so much going on right now. Almost, Joe Rex wrote, almost not enough time to get to it. I'm John Roberts. Marquise Munson is behind the glass. This is The Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game. And, man, you know, the headlines got to be grabbed right now by what's going on in the world of college sports. I don't think it was, I mean, it wasn't inevitable. I thought it was going to happen. It's just shocking, though, Joe, when you hear something from two of the Power Five football conferences that they will not play in the fall. College football in so many parts of the country, I'd like to say every part of the country, is just woven into the fabric of what we do, of what we love, and then you take in the devastation of the players. I am not too sure as of right now we can really grasp the full impact of this.
No doubt. And you're talking about on the economy of college sports, you're talking about a lot of businesses, a lot of towns that rely heavily on those 7 or 8 weekends a year. And just a lot. And look, these athletes, we've talked about it. We need to continue to talk about it. Mental health right now is absolutely a big concern for these kids who have been identified with these sports for many, many years, and now it's taken away from them this fall.
Joe, I want to bring in Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. And Nicole, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time that I know is very busy for you right now. What was your initial reaction? Was there any surprise when you heard this news, or did you think it was just a matter of time?
Well, you know, it was a matter of time for both of the two conferences that made the big call on Tuesday, you know, for a number of weeks now. And honestly, from even earlier in the quarantine, it just felt like the leadership in those leagues had kind of maybe faced COVID head on and understood what a long shot it was going to be longer than some of their peers. And I think a lot of that probably had to do with what areas got hit hardest early, because if you look at the Big Ten footprint, and you look at the Pac-12 footprint, that certainly makes sense. And so I just think they've been looking at this very clear-eyed for a very long time about all of the things that would need to happen, need to be in place from a community standpoint, state standpoint, in order to see if this could work. And then to get to that point, to get the feedback from their medical advisory groups and to make a decision, even though it's unpopular. It also had felt for a number of weeks that both of those leagues and their leadership would be willing to stick their neck out and do that.
Okay, Nicole, so it sounds like, and you have reported this, that there have been some recent studies related to the, and I may butcher this word, but myocarditis, I believe,
yes.
That have been of particular concern. Now, my question is, first of all, why doesn't Kevin Warren, speak more thoroughly about that when he talks about this? Because I think he could have been more detailed and forthcoming on some of the things they talked about. And also, I wonder why Ronnie Green, University of Nebraska-Lincoln Chancellor, essentially comes out and says, we think it's safe. We know that other leagues right now are waiting and seeing, and we'll see how that all turns out. But like that, to me, from the outside looking in, speaks of, you know, different people in the same league listening to different medical information.
Well, I mean, if you heard yourself just say that, doesn't that sound like our entire country right now?
Yes, so it does. Yes.
People are choosing to believe certain studies and certain information, or certain people telling them their information. So it's oddly a perfect microcosm of the larger issues here, where this has been very different depending on where you live and your personal experience with COVID, your personal, where you personally are getting your information and what you believe, because apparently we don't have a shared set of facts anymore. So I think that, you know, one thing, and hopefully there's more transparency coming from the three leagues and their medical advisory groups, you know, the three that are trying to play on, is they're going to have to also be transparent about this heart condition. Because, you know, if it got to a point where, you know, emerging information and data, you know, was alarming enough for two leagues for this to be an important factor in two leagues shutting it down, those three leagues, Big 12, SEC, and the ACC, are going to need to explain exactly how they are going to make sure that that isn't as alarming. And obviously, you know, EKGs and you know, this is something that can be treated, and all of these pieces to the puzzle, but they're going to need to be transparent as well. And your point is valid about Kevin Warren. I do think he possibly could have made this clearer. I think what the Pac-12 did was more effective, putting out their medical document and kind of specifically outlining. They didn't go into a ton of details on myocarditis, but they did, you know, outline, you know, potential long-term, potential side effects, and they literally outlined why you can't play right now and all the conditions that weren't met. That was helpful. And so I think, you know, hopefully the Big Ten gets to a point where maybe they can release their medical documents or add more transparency. But honestly, it's coming to a point where, to the earlier point about people believing different doctors and different studies and different reporting, I think we're going to need a lot more of this to be made public. There needs to be a lot more transparency, especially if these medical groups disagree with each other, because, you know, this is really important. This is a lot of people's health at stake. And also, you know, this is a new virus that the public doesn't know a lot about. And I think that it would just be very helpful if, you know, the public at large can get more information from these medical groups.
No, I'm really glad you said that last part, Nicole, because I think another issue, you're right, it's different people. You can go out and find anything to confirm what you want to believe right now in the world, but also, like, even the science community doesn't know a lot. I mean, that disclaimer needs to be put with everything here is, like, people will go back and say a doctor said something in March that turns out totally wrong or changes minds. Like, yeah, we are watching these scientists and doctors in real time try to figure this out as everybody races to do so. And so to me, I guess, why wouldn't you take the safest possible option, right? That would be, I guess that would be in general my feeling on that. But yes, I do want to see more transparency, more discussion, and like you said, Nicole, more from the leagues that are deciding. Let me throw this at you real fast. Let's say these studies hadn't come out, okay? These recent studies about the heart issues. We still have the virus not doing well in this country. You still have concerns, including liability, and I believe that has to be part of this discussion. Do you think without that, they would have trudged forward on this?
It's a good question. It's hard to predict. I do think that it's possible they move forward with padded practices. They get into training camp, because the two things that in the three leagues that are still going are pointing on, you know, there's two great unknowns right now. One is, what is training camp going to mean for potential spread in a roster? They've been trying to do small group workouts. They've been trying to socially distance as much as possible. What does it mean when you have more players in close proximity to each other? That's an unknown that we're now starting to get information about as camps have opened. And then the other unknown is the regular students. So you've got students starting classes on Monday, this past Monday, at places like UNC and Notre Dame. So that information is also going to help inform these decisions. So I do think at that point, maybe it is possible that the other leagues do wait a little bit to see what information you get from those two unknowns. But, you know, there were so many other factors that come into this, to your point about kind of like how the society and their communities were handling this. So the fact that, you know, you're running into issues with testing in a number of places in the Pac-12 because there were outbreaks and the healthcare system was overwhelmed. I mean, the fact that if you can't have testing that you're feeling is accurate, reliable, and getting results within a reasonable time frame, you're not going to be able to move forward either, because then there's a good chance there's an unchecked outbreak at any given point. If you have to wait days and days in between getting your test results back, you know, there were a number of states that have imposed travel restrictions that would need to have exemptions to move around and not have to 14-day quarantine when they return back from a game. So there were a lot of other pieces that, again, you know, come into the calculation, but they could have, again, you know, waited a little bit longer. And that's really what we were hearing from Ohio State, Iowa, and in some other places in the Big Ten, that they just wanted – they did prefer a delay and to see if things got better in a few weeks. Those factors would have still come into play. But, you know, I think when you're thinking about potentially unknown long-term health condition, you know, potential side effects, that's where the urgency comes in.
Talking to Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. And Nicole,
When you look at the players, the devastation of the players, I think, is something that your heart has to go out to. But recently, a gentleman of the stature of Roger Penske, who had to decide not to let fans in the Indy 500, said that that was the most difficult business decision of his entire life. So that makes me think that these presidents and these people that have had this thing weigh on them, how difficult do you think it was for these people to pull the plug, or do you think it was an easy decision for them to decide to err on the side of safety?
I do not think it was easy. Part of the reason that this has gone to this point is that there's so much money at stake, right? There's a lot of people's livelihoods at stake. You know, these players, many of them want to play, which they made clear via hashtag over the weekend. And it's not easy to take that away from them. To Joe's earlier point, mental health services is going to be a huge piece of this moving forward. And also just a sense of normalcy about what practices can look like and staying on campus. But from a financial standpoint, I was on a number of Zoom calls with Big Ten athletic directors yesterday, and they are not mincing words. They have been doing different financial models for best case scenario, worst case scenario, different capacity models, different games to figure out what this lost revenue is going to be. And you saw a couple of different athletic directors throw out potentially $100 million in lost revenue. So, you know, it's not easy. There's going to be, as Barry Alvarez says, there's going to have to be layoffs. I would expect that, you know, more coaches are going to have to take more pay cuts, maybe furloughs. You saw that a little bit earlier in the pandemic with some of the football coaching staff. And it's going to be a challenge moving forward. I mean, I think depending on if you can play in the spring and, you know, potentially any money you can recoup at that point, you know, again, you need to have the NCAA tournament. You need that money coming in. There's still a lot of unknowns from a financial standpoint in the next academic year, but you have to figure out some of these things, and you've got to think that kind of college athletics as a whole could look very different in a few years, depending on who can come out of this and what recalibrates.
Okay, two quick ones, Nicole. I'm gonna throw the scale of 1 to 10 at you on both of them, 10 being most likely that the other three leagues – follow suit at some point, and that a spring season is viable?
I would say it's a pretty high number that we'll eventually get there with the other leagues. Again, unless maybe there's drastic changes in society, and behavior. Because, you know, to this point, you know, everyone just kind of took for granted that we'd be in a position by September to play these sports outside of a bubble and with travel, without really changing behavior too much as individuals in society. And so I think there is an expectation through, you know, administrators and a lot of levels that the other leagues will eventually get there and make the same call. But again, they're going to try. They're going to see what could potentially change. They want to see what medical information we'll have, and they want to see, you know, how it goes with regular thousands of students, which, by the way, if that just causes massive spikes on campuses, that makes that decision easier, or at least more straightforward. Again, it's not an easy decision. And to the subject of spring, you know, I think people are going to figure out if it's viable in the next few weeks and months here. I don't think anyone's going to throw in the towel on day one and say it's not doable. There's obviously a lot of concerns about playing two seasons in the same calendar year. You've got to think that they would be shorter, you know, that would still potentially impact the fall 2021 season, and it wouldn't be returning to normal. But, you know, if the other option is to not have college football for the entire academic year and not recoup any of that lost revenue, I just think you've got to try. So I expect, we'll figure out if it's viable and what it looks like. You've had, you know, the Junior College Association and the SWAC have released models of how they're going to do the spring season. So again, people are trying and people are going to do it. We'll see if they can do it at the highest level of college football.
Nicole Auerbach, thank you so much for your insight. We appreciate the time. Stay safe and hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, so much to take into consideration right here, Joe. When we come back, we are going to follow the money. Stay with us, everybody. You are listening to The Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Nashville. This is 102.5 The Game, The Morning Drive. Marquise Munson is steering the ship. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad. Well, we are just we're floating along here on what is uncharted territory and the kind of waters that we have never sailed through before with what is going on. But I think, Joe, when you look back at some of these decisions that have to be made. Again, I just quoted Roger Penske a moment ago that he had to make that decision. So for a guy who is a multi-billionaire who owns large racetracks and large companies all over the world, he said the most difficult business decision he ever had to make was do I run the Indy 500 without fans? Or do I let the fans in and risk getting somebody sick? He said that was the most difficult business decision he ever had to make. So let's not only forget that for these college presidents, chancellors, anybody who had a say in this thing, of course, we know what the coaches are going to say. We know what their decision is. But also, this is big money. This is big business. When you talk about hundreds of millions of dollars for these schools, that they are not only opting out of football, but they're opting out of that money as well.
They are. Now, let's remember, we've talked a lot about college athletics. It's a $1 billion industry, right? Well, college is a $1 trillion industry. And I will say another criticism of these presidents as they make this decision is, and this is not true of all of their universities, but for those who are welcoming kids on campus right now, how can you justify this and now you're going to have 30,000 kids in your classrooms, in your dorms? I mean, if you're worried about safety or if you're worried about liability, and realistically you're worried about both, how do you put those two decisions together? I don't know the answer to that. I know, my alma mater, Michigan State, has basically gone virtual only at this point. And I honestly don't know the rundown of the whole Big Ten, but I know some of them are having kids on campus. So how does that work? I don't understand it. And frankly, the football players or even the athletes of other sports too can be more protected, can be more tested, can be more controlled than a regular student population.
So, Joe, you can stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Now, I don't want to, again, throw the old BS flag on somebody who, yes, you're in this thing as a coach in the SEC, ACC, some of these power conferences. These coaches make millions of dollars a year. There's no question about that. We know that. And so therefore, they're probably going to be on the side of playing because that's their business. That's what they do. And I think it was a fairly legitimate argument when we heard guys the likes of Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban coming out and saying, look, we can control these guys better. And if you've ever been around a college football program, guys, these things are big, well-oiled machines. They are well-funded. They are well-staffed. And sometimes they have some of the best training and medical people available anywhere taking care of these very special athletes. So Ohio State, when Gene Smith said that he was going to, you know, they're going to make sure that everybody has the access to meals, you know, because that's what they're there for, too. Because they need medical meals, they need a place to stay, they can still use the training facilities. Is it that much different, though, down the road than actually playing these ball games?
Right, yeah. Now, well, look, I mean, obviously the actual act of playing football, if we're talking about situations that could spread the virus, that could be, I mean, that's a pretty high-risk activity.
It's high contact.
Yeah, it's a collision.
It's not social distancing.
Yeah, it's not social distancing. So, you know, that aspect of it, you have to take that into consideration when you're talking about, quote-unquote, the safety of the kids. Now, would I still say a player who goes home and is just home and there's no oversight, there's no guidance, it would be safer on campus even playing the game? I would. I would also hope that anyone who's on scholarship to play football, even if this season is taken away, would continue to be in school and working to get that degree. But then again, we come to this situation again, so they're going to these classes, right? I mean, I'm sure there's some social distancing, there's some masks,
yeah,
whatever, but they're living in some kind of a dorm, they're going to classes. You got thousands and thousands of students on campus. So how does that work? There's no easy answer, obviously, to any of this. I will say on the subject of coaches, John, you're right. They make millions. And, I mean, frankly, I don't think they're going to be disrupted that much. Some have taken some little pay cuts here and there. They're going to, you know, when football resumes, they will be there and they will be making their money. I think it's hard to be successful in that business if you don't have some real relationships with people. You are telling these parents, I'm going to be the parent here for the next 4 or 5 years. And it may be that you have assistants who do a lot of that work. But, you know, look, I take these guys at their word for the most part about their care for the kids, about, you know, their belief that there's a lot of benefits here and that if players are willing to take the risk, then they should be allowed to. I mean, I think they make a lot of good points. Problem is, this is not a professional labor situation where you can collectively bargain a situation like the NFL and say, look, here's what you know. Here's what we have to offer to you, opt in or out, and this is what we're going to collectively bargain, and hey, everybody moves forward. That's why the NFL is going to have a season and probably take over college football television inventory spots, and it's a lot of why we're sitting here in this unprecedented time wondering what just happened.
Yeah, and again, when it comes to the business aspect of this thing, I think we throw out $100 million because, you know, give or take, that's generally with one of these big universities. That's basically the figure, give or take a few, of what a college football season brings in. Now, if you also look at some of the smaller schools, when a school like, say, Georgia Southern goes to play Georgia at the beginning of the year, it's a little warm-up thing for like the Bulldogs in that situation, but for the Eagles, therefore, it then all of a sudden is just a ton of income for them. That's where they make up that income. So when you are still allowing the students on campus, student-athletes on campus, you're providing the medical, mental health, food, et cetera, for them, there comes a time when push is going to have to come to shove in terms of how you're going to continue to fund that without this large amount of money coming in.
That's true. I mean, I think that at some point when we get back to normal, it's still, you know, the football drives everything. It's the revenue sport. So I don't think that aspect of it will be touched. And in fact, I think there are going to be positive changes out of all this in terms of some of the scholarship guarantees, some of the, well, name, image, likeness is coming too in some form. And even I think maybe in some level, the players having a voice, having some kind of collective organization. It can't be a union. Northwestern tried that. The National Labor Relations Board shot it down. They're not employees. Most of these are public universities. Again, it's the whole shell game financially that keeps this a nonprofit pursuit, you know. But I do think that a lot of those things can get better, and I think the hits, frankly, are going to come with a lot of these coaches who absolutely are doing their life's work out of love, and they're making not that much money, and they're coaching field hockey or swimming or bowling or whatever it may be, and so many of those opportunities are going to be taken away. That's where the cuts are going to come before you touch the stuff that makes the money.
Yeah, so if there is maybe a positive that could come out of a huge negative, maybe this is the launch point. Maybe this is the watershed moment where the collegiate athletes get some type of power, get some type of control over what they're doing for these universities, which we know the universities make millions. Yes, the athletes get scholarships, but in the end, it doesn't seem like it's really a fair distribution. At least that's what the college athletes are going to tell you. So Nashville SC back in action after a very disappointing situation in their particular tournament. Pro soccer is coming back. Drake Hills from the Tennessean is going to be with us here in just a moment. Stay with us, everybody. This is the Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC is back. Nashville SC will face FC Dallas tonight at 7:30 p.m. Catch all of the action on 102.5 The Game or ESPN 949, beginning with the pregame coverage at 7:15. Big excitement for soccer fans right now, and welcome back to the Morning Drive, everybody. 102.5 The Game. John Roberts and Joe Rexroad. Marquise Munson is steering the ship for us. Want to welcome in Drake Hills from the Tennessean. And Drake, I guess there's a little bit of makeup going on here between Dallas and the Nashville SC, because they both teams just didn't really get a chance to play really at all. So they're behind in terms of getting time on the field.
That's right. I mean, they need to. They need to get this underway. It helps a little bit that they're going up against a team that has experienced the same thing. So there's no such thing as no uneven playing fields. They both have had, unfortunately, the same storyline happen, obviously, with FC Dallas. They had, 11 players, test positive for the coronavirus, as well as a few staff members as well inside the Orlando bubble during the MLS's back tournament. They were withdrawn first, and then obviously Nashville with their 9 players testing positive for the coronavirus and being withdrawn from the tournament. And it's good. It's good for Nashville to be able to be in this place to go up against Dallas twice, both today and then again Sunday. And then they'll be back with the rest of MLS coming up, August 22nd, when the Phase 1 fall restart begins.
So, Drake, is this sort of because they were both withdrawn, sort of like, okay, now you go play each other a couple times to try to make up for what you missed here? I mean, how did this come about in terms of the schedule moving forward?
Right, Joe. I mean, this has always been the plan in terms of what MLS wanted to do for both of these clubs. Obviously, for the group stage matches at the MLS back tournament, they counted for MLS regular season standing points. So this wasn't necessarily about trying to get them to play some sort of games to get a restart for tournament sake. This is to get them caught up with the rest of the league so that they could also be in competitive spot and possibly compete for those playoff spots in MLS Cup, which is expected to begin in November. So you have a situation where not all three are being made up at once, and there's an expectation that the third missed match, because each team played 3 group stage matches in the MLS's back tournament, the third is expected to be scheduled sometime later this fall. So, yes, this has always been the discussion. As soon as the teams landed back in their home markets, and you're talking to Luchi Gonzalez, the head coach at FC Dallas, I talked with him a couple of days ago, and he said that this has been something that he was proud and pleased that the conversation with MLS had been ongoing pretty much since the day that they landed back in Dallas after being withdrawn. So this has been a constant project, and it's good to see MLS make this official.
Talking to Drake Hills from the Tennessean as we get ready to have soccer come back now. And, Drake, pro soccer does not have quite the kind of TV deal that many other places have. So I think these teams really depend on fans in the stands for a lot of their revenue. And what we understand is that where allowed, fans will be allowed in these games. What have you heard about when it comes to where allowed as to what areas and what places and what number of fans are going to be allowed in to watch these matches?
Right. So FC Dallas is allowing up to a little over 5,000, precisely 5,110 fans that are allowed to trickle into Toyota Stadium up there in Frisco. And it's looking like there's going to be a distant setup to where exactly where they're going to be able to sit. There's not going to be a lot of convening and different clusters. They're going to be spread around the stadium. It's not necessarily a bowl construction, but there is seats around the field. So they're going to be in a social distant setup, but there are going to be fans allowed. For context, Toyota Stadium is about 20,500 seats at capacity. And so just over 5,000, you still have that capacity that sits well low. But I mean, the big purpose here is that, with Nashville, if this game were to be played here, we obviously heard from Mayor John Cooper yesterday about, the rate in which positive cases are still coming in at 100 cap, you're looking at a little over 23 on average still testing positive. So you have to think about getting folks to still wear masks, getting folks to still stay at home when they should, let alone allowing fans at the game. So it's quite a drastic change when you take a look at what's going on in Dallas, what's going on with the county health officials there, and something that it should be very interesting because, as we've been talking about, this is a game that's one of two. So they're playing Wednesday. We'll see what happens on Sunday, and we'll see what happens next week where there'll be, tons of cases. in that county, in that immediate area, because of fans. Will there be any players in danger? We hope not, but these are things that we have to think about when you're having those fans. Do I expect all 5,100 or so seats to be bought and for fans to attend? I'm not quite sure, but I do expect there to be a significant amount of fans tonight at Toyota Stadium.
And then, of course, home, the first return home game is August 30th against Inter-Miami CF. So still some time before that takes place. Drake, on the field, what are you really looking for tonight? And do you have any more sense, I guess, of how this club might fit in to this league race after watching the return-to-play tournament?
Well, the biggest thing for me is how deep they want to go into their squad. How deep does Nashua SC go onto their bench? They've got a situation where you're going up against a team who has the young talent that you need. Nashua has that talent as well on the bench. They've got some experience defending and Jahlil Anibaba, but I'm not necessarily thinking about them trying to fit in on the defensive side of the football. I mean, I think in terms of going, you know, in defense, they're quite fine. They're actually one of the best teams, in my opinion, in terms of personnel in MLS. But the real thing that I'll be looking at tonight for Nashville is, what do they look like going forward? How dynamic, how threatening will they be in going forward? They have David Akam. They have Randall Leal, who's a big-time, young, 23-year-old Costa Rican who's played for the national team, who's a dribbler. He's exciting to watch. He loves his skills. He's very flashy and flamboyant. Will he be able to make an impact on this game? Will he be able to get an assist, possibly get a couple of shots on goal? Dominique Badji is expected, although he has a bit of a quad issue and has been listed as question mark. I still expect Dominique Badji to start tonight, and they need goals. That's point blank period. Nashville need to score some goals tonight, and that's the biggest thing that not only us here in Nashville, but I think league-wide, especially on the media side, we're expecting to see some difference in that category, because that certainly wasn't the case in the first two games in March.
How do you view this opportunity for Nashville SC, Drake? You know, the Nashville Predators quickly out of their playoffs. There's no preseason football for people to watch right now. Obviously, a huge opportunity lost with what happened in Orlando. But how important do you think this time is for Nashville SC to sort of wedge its way into the consciousness of some sports fans in Nashville who maybe otherwise might be preoccupied by something else?
Yeah, I mean, this is a second chance for Nashville. Nashville SC, this is their second opportunity to be in the spotlight. What would have happened if they would have played against Chicago Fire July 8th in Orlando? They would have been the team that was Nashville's sports, live sport, the only live sport at that time. The Preds, you know, still were getting ready for preseason to go into Edmonton and to start their series against the Arizona Coyotes. And so that had yet to start, obviously. Titans camp had yet to start. So you have pretty much the same situation, the same setup. It's just, you know, happened to be a little bit later now that the Preds are out of the Stanley Cup playoff push. This is their opportunity. You know, game on ESPN Plus, as well as MyTV30. Obviously, you guys will be calling the game as well over the airwaves. So it's their chance to get into Nashville homes without any Preds, without any Titans in their live sports. So when it just comes to simply building those relationships with Nashville and getting that exposure, it's pretty much the same as it was about a month ago.
Drake Hills from the Tennessee, and man, we really appreciate your time and your insight. This is a very exciting time for soccer here in the Music City. Looking forward to tonight, and stay safe, man, and again, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, man, 5 months and 4 days later, we'll see action.
Yeah, let's go.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Drake. We do appreciate it. We got to grab us a quick break here on the Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game. When we come back, just how grisly has the bubble been for Memphis? You're listening to The Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Nashville, 102.5 The Game, The Morning Drive. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad with you, along with Marquise Munson behind the glass steering the ship. That was Drake Hills, who covers Nashville SC for the Tennessean. You know, this is another one of those sports right now. And Joe, it's someday we're going to get back to the point where we just start talking about sports competition on the field and competition on the ice, but almost everything right now has that COVID twist to it. So you get FC Dallas, Nashville SC. They go down to Orlando to try to play in this tournament. They both have a overwhelming number of positive tests for the virus, so they get excused. They get sent out. So now there's a situation where they have a couple games to make up, and as Drake just pointed out just a moment ago, this isn't soccer for the sake of soccer. They need to have those games to equal it out amongst the rest of the league.
Yeah, this isn't just like the timeout corner. Like, you two got kicked out. You go over and, you know, talk to yourselves. Yeah, this is actually games they need to make up. And as Drake said, who does a great job, by the way, Drake for the Tennessean and cover Nashville SC, they have a third game TBD. This schedule right now for Nashville SC goes through September 12th. So there are more games to be figured out, and as he said, it looks like the playoffs in that November time period. So these games are really important.
And another thing that's important, I think Drake brought out very, very well, the pro soccer programs just simply right now they are televised. The games are televised, and I believe it is Fox where you can find the regional Fox where you can find the Nashville ball game tonight. But the thing is, match. I said ball game. It's a match. That's not proper.
There's a ball and it's a game.
There's a ball and a game, it's but it's a match.
We can Americanize soccer terms. It's fine.
Somewhat. So if you look at that, therefore, you have a league that depends greatly on ticket sales and the other things that come with having fans and stands and butts and seats. Drake had pointed out that in Dallas they're going to allow about 5,000 fans in there, but opposite situation now when we come back to Nashville for the rest of what's going on right now. There's going to be places, and I think every sport is going to have to deal with this as we go forward, Joe. It's not necessarily up to a league. It's not necessarily up to a team. It is up to the local municipality as to what they're allowing from what they hear from their health departments as to whether or not they're going to be fans, and it hurts some people more than others.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and honestly, local municipality is a consideration in some of these college decisions and why you also see sometimes some very different opinions from different university presidents in different parts of the country who are in the same league. I mean, in the NFL, there are some stadiums that may be able to have some fans this season. We already know some that won't for sure. The Jets and Giants will have zero fans. The Raiders, I believe, the now Las Vegas Raiders, I believe, have, even though Mark Davis wants nothing to do with that, has said that they're done. No fans, right?
Yep, no fans in that beautiful vacuum looking arena.
That place, I mean, that's like the real life Death Star.
Yeah, it looks like the Roomba. I think is what
it does look just like a Roomba.
But what a beautiful facility! And again,
yeah,
I understand.
And you get nothing.
You understand. You get it. You get what these people are up against. But man, just the shame of having a facility like that and having the hoopla around an NFL team in Las Vegas, and then you say, well, we're going to do it, but we can't have fans in the stands. And you know, the president of that franchise, he's one of the guys that said not too long ago, he said, man, guys, I'm not sure, you know, we're going ahead. And this is a possibility, Joe, because I hope it's not true. You know, NFL is saying full steam ahead right now. But so was everybody else in terms of going forward with sports. Then we get the bombshell dropped on us from the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Then you get, you know, some different things going on. SEC and ACC have the pressure on them now, the peer pressure, if you will. You know, some of these people are out there saying there's not a given that we're going to have this full NFL season.
Well, yeah. Look, I think it's certainly possible that it could get disrupted just like we've seen the Major League Baseball season. But remember, when the Marlins had their outbreak, there was also a lot of, they're about to shut it down, and I don't see them shutting it down. Now, they are talking about a bubble for the playoffs, which is smart. But, you know, the NFL season, I think, could be disrupted, could be messed up. I think you're going to have some really strange roster situations with games. But I'm fairly confident it pushes forward and proceeds, and and carries on through to a Super Bowl. Again, fairly confident, while let's all admit,
yes,
we don't know the science. We're not doctors or scientists. We don't know what's going to happen with the virus. We don't know what's going to happen with society. But this is also today, yesterday, it's a huge illustration of college sports and how that amateurism model does not work the same way pro sports can work in a pandemic.
Yeah, because you gave the pro players the opt-out clause. That's there. And the players that decided, 60-some, 66, I guess it was, that decided to opt out, that they're out and they're being taken care of. But if anybody is going to make it work, you got to think it would be the NFL, because they have also, then again, the pressure that the other leagues right now that are playing within these bubbles, you can't do the NFL in a bubble. It doesn't work the same way. It's a different beast out there. But when you see what's going on with those other sports, they have that pressure to get back there. Because, man, Joe, again, we keep going back to money, but let's face it. When there's that amount of money on the line, you follow the money.
You absolutely do. And that's why I was – look, I'm not surprised by where we are with the Big Ten and with college football, but I went back and forth a lot over the past few months on the idea of, man, I just can't imagine them giving up what is the foundation of the entire economic model. So – again, that's why I'm also saying right now, for anybody who's saying, now forget the spring, it doesn't work, you can't do it, even though they don't have a plan, which is ridiculous, they're going to develop a plan, because the idea of not going through this 1920 season without college football is a big problem.
Marquise, when your team starts talking about scenarios, you always know when someone says scenario, you're in a bad spot. The Grizzlies right now are looking at a scenario where they could still be around for a while, but man, just that word means an uphill battle.
Look, Damian Lillard is on a mission.
Oh my God.
In these last two games. He scored a total of 111 points in the last two games. He had 60-plus last night. And he had one shot where it bounced off the back of the rim, bounced up, thought it was going to go out of bounds, but and then it just went in. So Damian Lillard is on it, and this is why you just don't have arguments with people on social media, because you don't know how they're going to react. Damian Lillard looked on the camera on live television and said, put some respect on my name.
On my bleeping name. On my bleeping name.
So, yeah. So now with that win, and obviously with the Grizzlies losing once again yesterday, now the Grizzlies are in a situation to where they lose the 8 seed. So now the Portland Trailblazers are for the first time are now the 8 seed. And it's going to all come down to Thursday. All four teams are a half a game back from each other. Now what kind of works or against the Grizzlies in this scenario is when you look at the Suns, who are also buying for that position, they play the Mavericks. But unfortunately for the Grizzlies, they may not play Luka Doncic because they have no dog in the fight. The Mavericks, they're already solidified in that 7 seed, so they're not going to move up or down, so they'll probably bench their starters, so then the Suns can possibly get a win, and also the Suns are pretty hot right now because they have yet to lose a game yet. And then when you look at the other games on the schedule, you look at the Spurs and Jazz. Jazz, they don't have anything to play for either. They're not going to move up or down in the rankings, so they're probably going to bench Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. So the Spurs can get an easy win. And then when you look at the Blazers, the Nets are already in that 7 seed, so they're already solidified. They clinched the 7 seed in the playoffs. So, you know, the Nets may bench players, which that's not going to matter anyway because half of their players are bench players. So it doesn't really matter anyway. But the Blazers, like I said, are on a tear. So it's going to come down to the Grizzlies have to win against the Bucks in order to make the playoffs, because if they don't, then if the Suns win or if the Spurs win, they're going to get that 8 seed or that 9 seed to play in that play-in tournament on Saturday. So they got to beat the Bucks. And that's going to be a tough task because it all depends on whether or not Giannis and Chris Middleton play or not. So that's going to be the determining factor on whether the Grizzlies can win. But the way the Grizzlies have been playing, I don't even see that matters much. But if they bench Giannis and they bench Chris Middleton, the Grizzlies got a shot, but they got to win. And they could have easily clinched yesterday by just winning. And they didn't do too well. So
well, against a really
good
team. Celtics
had something to say about that.
Like I said yesterday, though, Joe, I said it. Celtics, they've been playing full man on deck. They're not playing for anything, but they're just playing all their players.
Get ready,
you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, Kemba. They've been Marcus Smart, all of them. Enes Kanter. They've been playing everybody. So that was difficult for them to get by. But it's going to be even more difficult. But all the teams that – all four teams that are buying for that 8-9 seed, at least their opponents are probably going to be benching players. I think the more likely scenario is if you want to play Luka, which is – that'll be a dumb move because he almost, like, hurt his ankle yesterday. So you might not want to play him. So I would probably just bench all your starters. But it's going to be interesting because it's going to be all games on Thursday where four of them are on the line for an 8-9 seed. And then Pelicans are late in the night. But who cares about them because they're not in.
They're out.
They're not in. They're out. Guys, who cares?
If you want to grasp, again, for positivity, and we always try to do this, okay? There's plenty of negative stuff out there to talk about. But one of the positive things about this, we're seeing so many little bits of history being made. And I thought this was just kind of interesting. This is the first play-in game in the NBA to determine a playoff spot since 1956 when the Syracuse Nationals defeated the New York Knicks for the final playoff spot.
I knew it was the Knicks. It's always the Knicks. When in doubt, when in doubt about a losing anything, just go with the Knicks.
Poor Knicks.
All right, so what do you got to do on a Major League Baseball field in this day and age to get sat down for 20 games? A 20-game suspension was handed down. We'll tell you all about that in just a moment as we continue on here. This is the Morning Drive, 102.5 The Game.